Hi, this is Paul Holmgren. You're watching Nasty Knuckles.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Derek Nasty Suttermeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What is happening, Nasty?
Not much, Rigorelia. What's going on with you, buddy?
This is it, man.
Yep.
Well, enjoying my time here with you, as always.
Well, you know, you get here late, you leave right away, but, it, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah,
you know, I got to deal with it. You're a busy man.
You're a busy man. You know, you're busy showering and frosting up the tips.
You have to. I don't have frosty tips, by the way. I might get them back just so
you
won't lie and say that I have them.
I think you need them.
I think I do, actually.
Your Bieber bangs?
Should I get the Biebs going again?
I think you should.
Actually, it's not the Biebs. It's the Nast. I had it before he did. He wasn't even relevant when I had the Biebs.
Yeah, you're right. But you did have the frosty tips, Biebs, bangs.
I don't know if I had frosty tips, though. Maybe.
We'll have to pull up some photos of Nasty back in the day.
Here we go.
there's some floating around.
I'll tell you what, other than frosty tips, we got to, like, the Flyers just can't catch a break here. Like,
I know.
We found out last week about Joel getting hurt, Farabee. You know, he should be ready around October, though, which is good. But then, you know, this goalie, Ivan Fedotov, is detained now in Russia.
Crazy news.
It's insane. You just talk about not being able to catch a break.
Yeah. Yeah, man, that sums it up, right? I mean, if it couldn't get any worse for the Flyers, it just did somehow.
It's actually a scary situation.
You know, it's scary. I mean, it's scary for him, his family, I'm sure. And no one really knows the storyline behind it besides what the tabloids are saying, the media saying.
Right.
So, wish him the best. I guess is all that we can say. Pray for this kid, because it's. It's scary. We don't know. No one knows, you know, how this thing plays out, but wild.
Yeah,
wild.
It's crazy. And there was as we were shooting our episode today, you know, like Baller and Debo were telling us about Kirill the Thrill maybe having something to do with it. We don't know. It's all speculation. It's on, you know, Twitter and Instagram, but my goodness, this turned into a bit of a shit show.
Yeah.
And it's scary. And I, you know, we talked about with our guest, Ivan Provorov, just got home, and I'm like worried for him. They may just try to come up with something, you know, to keep him or any of the Russian athletes that they go are going back home for the summer or whatever it may be. But hopefully everything will work out.
Yeah, I sure hope so. You know, in Fedotov's case, it was, you know, apparently dodging the draft, and then Kirill's case was somehow fraudulently making or distributing military IDs, and in fact, one of them apparently was Fedotov's, from what the Twitter feeds are saying. So again, we're just parroting the opinions of and what's coming up on Twitter. We don't really know the depth of it, but both cases are scary.
They're scary
because you're not talking about just, you know, some minor paperwork. You're talking about dealing with government and military is
new. In the word
in
dodging,
yeah.
Dodging something is
don't
sound, you know,
sound
doesn't
very
sound
good.
That great.
But, you know, again, we wish these guys the best. So hopefully that they can find their way through this in a peaceful manner. And we're going to wish them all the best. And we'll see what happens on the other side. But outside of that, got a big draft.
Yep. Flyers sitting with a number 5 pick. What do? Do you trade it? You go with the pick, you know? I know there's a Baller told us there's a couple right-handed defensemen. Available. One will be available probably the way it's shaken down, but I know it's not an overly great
draft, I should say,
but you never know either.
Yeah, you
never
get a top 5 pick.
Yeah.
Even on a weak draft year, still some gold there, you'd hope. Right. Obviously the guy's gotta pan out and stay healthy and continue to develop, but I'd like to think that if they do pick 5th and don't trade it, that player is going to develop and be a staple in the Flyers in the next few years. You'd like to think, you know, they're in the middle of a retool. However good this guy is, you'd like to think he'd step in the next year or two, right?
Yeah, you would think.
You'd think.
Top 5, I mean.
I mean, top five is still legitimate, even in a weak draft. So,
yep.
But there's just speculation around trade. I don't know. It's just the trade rumor itself is another speedy small forward.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if Flyers need that necessarily. You know, Chychrun's name is floating around. Jacob, big defenseman. I've seen him play. You know, we know his father. We've seen him around the Flyers alumni events, actually. The guy's built like a Greek god. You know,
yeah.
He'd be nice to have on the back end.
Yep.
But again, this, you know, we're looking short-term versus long-term. I don't have the answer. I'm not going to sit here and say I do. But I think, time will tell, obviously. And whoever they select is got to be, you got to hit this draft pick out of the park. You can't be borderline average, you know.
Yeah.
Again, you're going to feel the sting for the next few years, just like we have in the past with some of these other guys. So
yeah, you feel like you'd get a top five. It's maybe not this year, but he should be a player that's going to be able to contribute in the future.
Yeah.
Obviously, like you said, staying healthy is huge, but coming in under Torts to this development camp, once they start, I guess it's next week after the draft here, that'll be huge for a young guy and get a little taste of, pro hockey, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And under the guidance of, obviously, the new head coach, John Tortorella, I think it'll be just a great opportunity for setting the tone.
Yeah,
you know, the media gobbling it up and getting the energy into the Philly area, obviously, with the new coach, you know, establishing, you know, maybe a little early, but that new identity that we kind of talk about. But they're going to work, you know that.
Yes, 100%.
They're going to get a feel and taste for what's to come. And again, it's an exciting time for young guys, you know, coming to development camp. Looking back at some of the development camps that I participated in, it's exciting, right?
Yeah.
Even knowing you're coming into a organization with a new face behind the bench and a guy that's established as a hard guy, you know, I think these guys are excited. I think the city itself should be, you know,
excited for
rallying
sure.
around this time, right? Just keep building up that excitement. New picks coming in, obviously.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I think it's gonna be a good time for Philly, and just getting that energy back into the skate zone and just around the media, talking more positively around the team, because it's, as we know, the last 2 years have been a little bit tough.
Not so positive.
To say the
least.
Not
so positive, but I think we're going that way now.
I think so.
We're going to get more positive.
I think the biggest thing is just, not that it was controllable, staying healthy.
Right.
But going into the season training camp with the right attitude, I think, is key, which we know that will be addressed.
Yes.
Having Torts come in. But exciting. I'm excited. I know we talked about this last year and probably the year before. Exciting.
Yeah.
Exciting times.
It is.
But I feel this year is
a
breakthrough year.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. So, well, we'll see. We'll see tomorrow night what we do with the pick.
Yeah.
And then we'll see what happens, obviously in the future. But I think it's time.
I think it's time, Nast. Episode 78.
Yes.
With our man, Paul Holmgren. Huge fan.
Yes.
Probably one of the main reasons I ever suited up for the Philadelphia Flyers. Been one of the biggest fans. Paul Holmgren, John Stevens.
You know what's funny, quickly, before we get in this episode with him, when he sent you down the first time after the first three games we had played in New York, he called me and told me, and I was like, oh, okay. And he goes, holy fuck. He goes, Riley took it better than you. What's going on here? He was all over me because I was upset you got sent down. But anyway, great man.
Too,
did a lot for both of us. So
no doubt. All right. Episode 78 presented to you by Curaleaf, medical marijuana dispensary. Check them out at curaleaf.com. Episode 78. Let's go, Nast.
Let's go.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. And this week, we are very fortunate to have a gentleman who is very close to both of us in our hearts and had a lot to do with both of our careers. He's currently a senior advisor. He's been the president, the GM, assistant GM, head coach, assistant coach, basically done it all. Mr. Paul Holmgren, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Derek. Riley, it's a pleasure to be here. I've heard about your podcast, seen little clips of it many times, and really happy to be here.
Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate you, man. Yeah, it's good to see you. Sorry, last week at the Flyers Alumni Golf Tournament.
You didn't play, did you?
Well, not very well.
Did you walk?
No.
Okay. Wow.
Gave up walking.
You gave up walking. Good. Did, yeah. He used to walk.
Well, I still walk, but I'm not going to walk.
Walk the whole course.
Yeah. It's just.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not right. You got to spend time with people to get up on your own.
But. Yeah, right.
That's true. It was only with me because he just didn't want to talk to me.
Maybe.
And Hitch, I told the Hitch story about us golfing a few times where we tee off. It's just you, I, and Hitch. And he hits his first ball way left. Yeah, I'll get it, young Derek. I'm like, let me help you. Nope, I got it. Oh, here it is. What? Yeah. And by the end of the hole. Oh, it's like the ball went into the, like up into the shit. And then at the end, he goes, put me down for a bogey. He goes, over goes, bogey? He goes, this is like a nine or something. Yeah, 4 foot wedges later.
Plus the four he had in his pocket.
Yeah, he right? Was just dropped. Every time I said, let me
I
help
found
you.
It.
I yeah. go, found it.
No penalty anyway, strokes.
Yeah, but you don't. You need to start doing that, actually, when we play in those tournaments.
I know. Too honest.
I know you're too honest.
But you.
Yeah. So what's going on, Mr. Strong? What are you up to these days?
You know what? I'm not doing a lot. I'm just spending time, as much time as I can, with my grandkids, doing a little more traveling than just my wife and I. Spending time in Minnesota. We got a couple big trips coming up here at the end of the summer. We're going to Yellowstone in August. We're driving up to Maine for like a week in September. So my wife's not a big, she doesn't like to fly because she gets sick, air sick, car sick. But she's going out on a limb here, and we're doing the odd trip. So, and then with grandkids, we have nine total. Amazing. And from age 18 all the way down to 2, and trying to spend as much time with them as we can, and it's awesome. I love it. I golf when I can. Just trying to get better at that. And
scratch golfer, not bad.
No, I'm not. I scratch my head after my shot.
Oh man, the warden. Speaking of your wife, Doreen, she did a lot for me as well. She's an awesome woman. We called her the warden because warden. When she
said, I called her the warden.
Yeah,
I still do.
I adopted that, not in front of her though. No, you know, she'd laugh if I said it. But yeah, that's awesome. Did you get a chance to watch much of the playoffs? They were pretty interesting.
You know what? I got a chance to watch quite a bit. It's you know, I thought of all the series that I watched, it was outstanding hockey. Very competitive for the most part. At the end, I kind of thought Tampa would win, but Colorado was just too strong for them. And what a great final.
Yeah.
And just to see, you know, Colorado, I think over the last 5 years, they've sort of been building a little bit brick by brick almost. Yeah. And Joe Sakic's done a good job there. And the coach who they hired from Columbus a few years ago, I mean, he won the American League Championship. When Colorado hired him, I know a lot of people thought, well, who's this guy? Where'd he come from? And obviously, he's a good coach. I remember Torts telling me way back when they hired him that this guy's a good coach. He's going to do good things for Colorado. So good for them.
Yeah.
Good to see other teams win it once in a while. They hadn't won it in a while. And they've got a good young team that's going to be probably good for a while now.
They are fast, though.
Yeah.
What a fast hockey team. Yeah. It's crazy.
You think Tampa just burnt out towards the end there, having playing so much hockey in the last few years?
It's hard to say. I mean, you know, you always get the team's injury list at the end of the playoffs, and obviously they had guys hurt.
Sure.
But anytime you have long runs in the playoffs like they have in the last how many years now, I mean, they won the cup the last 2 years prior to this year. That's a lot of miles on guys' bodies. And I didn't think Hedman, I didn't think Kucherov looked the same. Obviously, they were missing Braden Point a lot of the playoffs. So I didn't think their goalie looked the same. So there's a lot of miles. But, you know, you gotta take your hat off to Colorado. They
100%.
Played well. They stuck to their game plan and I mean, the game where they won 7-0 was, I mean, talk about dominance. That was incredible to watch.
That was a 60-minute.
Tampa had literally zero time to do anything. Right? Yeah. I mean, that's team defense all over the ice. So it's good for Colorado. I'm sure Tampa will find a way to continue to be a good team. They still got good players that are young. They got still, in my opinion, the best goalie.
Yeah.
So they'll bounce back and be a good team again.
They've done a good job filling in spots when they've had to let guys go because of the cap. Right. You know, like I think they've done a great job of that. Like I was kind of hoping like Pierre Belmar would get a shot. Yeah. You know, I was kind of pulling for Tampa a little bit just because of, you know, not that Patty Maroon needs another cup, but Brian Elliott, I was really hoping for those guys. But it was nice to see another team win. Yeah. They deserved it. 100%. They definitely deserved it.
Yeah. So when you look at a team like Colorado, I mean, being a GM in your previous life, like what do you notice the most as being, you know, maybe one or two variables there that they've really focused in and honed in on?
Well, you know, obviously they had a number of high picks that panned out.
Right.
You look, Nathan MacKinnon was, you know, a consensus number one overall pick, probably in everybody's mind that year. They were fortunate to be in that position to draft him. Mm-hmm. Rantanen was a fairly high pick. Makar was a fairly high pick. Landeskog, I think, was the second overall pick. So, you know, that's really the nucleus of their team, those guys. And then I think Joe has done a tremendous job of plucking guys that, whether through trade or free agency, that kind of fit the mold. They all can skate. And he's one of those GMs that, you know, he lost the goalie last year. Trying to think of his name off the top.
Grubauer.
Grubauer lost him to free agency, and they filled in with Darcy Kemper and Francouz, I think you pronounce it.
Yeah.
You know, not goalies that you would consider like top, probably not even top 10 goalies in the league, right? But if your team plays good enough defensively, can you get by with a goalie that just makes the save at the right time, right?
Yeah.
And I know Kenny Holland used to think that way. Lots of GMs think that way, that you don't really need the top goalie. It's nice to have them, but you don't really need them. And Colorado proved that theory.
Their
goalie, not that their goalie, well, they played good.
They're
not big-name goalies.
I mean, you got a solid decor like that. You play away from the puck, it certainly takes the pressure off a tender.
Sure it does. What are your thoughts right now with, like, obviously Torts getting hired? It's great. I love Torts. I know you love Torts. With the Flyer situation last year was tough. Injuries obviously played a huge part. We've talked about this a million times, but what's your take on all of that?
Well, nowhere to go but up, right? I mean, the Flyers were not very good last year for a lot of reasons. Injuries are one, poor play, lots of bad stuff happened at the same time. It's just a year that everybody would like to forget and move on. I think, you know, bringing in John at this time is, in my opinion, the best thing the Flyers could have done. I think he's an outstanding motivator. I think the city will love him. Yeah. I think our fan base will love him. I think the players will love him. He's hard. He's hard to play for. But he cares about his players. He's passionate about how you play the game, and that'll spill over to the not only the players in the locker room, but I think our fan base and the building once we get going. I think it's a step in the right direction. Obviously, there's more that has to happen now for the Flyers to become relevant again. And I think just from a little bit that I've heard and seen and, you know, you get Couturier back. If Ryan Ellis can bounce back or come back and play, and a lot of the young guys that didn't have great years last year, you know, they're still good players. Provorov's still a good player. Sanheim's a good player. Farabee's a good player. I know he has a little bit of injury issue right now that he should be ready by October. Konechny's a good player. So there's enough good players there, and enough good players, young players that are coming up in the system that they can make headway. I think, again, we'll go back to John Tortorella and the staff. I know he filled out with Brad Shaw. I'm pretty sure they're trying to hire one more guy to fill out his staff. So I think they're moving in the right direction. Obviously, right. Training camp, you know, the draft's big starting tomorrow.
Yep.
Then they got their development camp, which you can kind of start taking strides with your young players, the Tortorella way, and
right.
The way John preaches things about work and passion, and I think those are good things that the Flyers need right now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. He's just we talked about that as well. Like, I love Torts. I've been fortunate enough to work with him a few times, but he is what they need.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. How important is it to establish or reestablish an identity for the Flyers in Philly?
Well, we used to have an attitude about, you know, we've been through tough times before, right? Like 06
right.
was maybe one of the worst years in history of the Flyers, right?
The 40th season.
Points-wise, it was, how many points do we have? 50? Oh, do we have 50?
It was a tough one.
But I think we all had the attitude about, you know, screw this, we're the Flyers. We'll come back. And that's the attitude that I think John is going to bring in now.
Yes. Like,
so do we need to give ourselves a slap across the – yeah, we need to – we're the Flyers. Right. We need to come back strong. And I think John, just from the little bit that I've talked to him since he's gotten the job, is – He's on it. He's on the case.
Yeah, right. He definitely is.
You know, he'll be here for development camp next week, and start the ball rolling there, and that's where it starts. You get your young guys into it, and that's once I know he's talked to all the top players, going down the roster, and like everybody knows so far that the guys that have talked to him what he's all about, and you know you don't have to look very far to see what he's done throughout the league wherever he's been. So. I look forward to the John Tortorella era. It couldn't happen soon enough for me.
Yeah, I agree. And you brought up 2006 and 2007. You stepped in that year at the time as what's the word I'm looking for? Interim GM. And you made some unbelievable moves before the deadline, bringing in Scotty Upshaw, Ryan Parent. I think Lassie Kukkonen was even part of that. Marty Biron. And then the big splash came in the summer where you got Kimo and Hartsey through a trade before the, I guess, the signing day, July 1 back then. Danny Briere, huge sign. And next thing you know, speaking of a retool, we're in the conference finals and injured. A lot of injuries that year. You never know what happens, but it's easy to say that. But you did that. It's not that easy, but you were able to do it. Like, is that something that Flyers have to do? Like, just try to bring in some. Obviously, you lose Claude. It's a lot. You know, it's probably your best player, in my opinion. I don't know.
Yeah,
but as a GM, you're like, you just scouring everything, trying to come up with something.
Yeah, you know, think back on that year. We did have a lot of good players in place, young players,
right?
And we had a lot of cap space, so we were able to do things.
That's true. Yeah,
that it's a little harder to do now. The one thing that's, you know, the pandemic has created a situation where all these teams are up against the cap at the same time, and there's no relief. So what you need to do now as a GM is find a willing dance partner to make a trade or work something out where you can take, you know, maybe a player that makes makes a lot of money off your roster. It's a very difficult work environment now for a general manager,
right?
Unless you're, you know, not a good team, or you know, you're so far under the cap that you have room to make things happen.
Right.
So Chuck's in a tough spot because of where the Flyers have been for really the last number of years because of our cap situation and the cap not going up. I mean, for
right
when the cap first started, it was $39 million, right, and then it went up to like 48, then it went up to 55, then it went up to 65. I remember when we signed Mike Richards, I said to Mr. Snyder, we can sign him to this 12-year deal, and it's, you know, it's this much money, and his cap, it's going to be this. And he said to me, he's our captain. Who cares? The cap's going to continue to go up. You know, it's going to be like $90 million, the cap, in 5 years or something like that. Well, it should have been at $90 million, probably, right? If it wasn't for the pandemic and the revenues drop. And
that's true.
You know, we're struggling as a league now to come back. So, you know, it's like I said, it's very problematic for a lot of GMs in the league right now because they literally have zero cap space to very little.
Yeah, no doubt. And not that it's a quick fix, but like putting much more emphasis on the draft. Obviously, there's always emphasis on the draft, but you gotta hit the picks. You mentioned it with Colorado. I mean, now more than ever, developing players and
You know, the Flyers have the fifth pick this year. From what I can gather, it's not a high end draft where Nathan MacKinnon and all these guys are in it. But it's a good draft. I think they believe they're going to get a good pick that can help somewhere down the road. But yeah, you get another young player into your system that you can develop and mold. And again, that's where John Tortorella and his staff are going to come in. You get this guy in the development camp and start the process of working with him, get him thinking the way you want your players to think, the mentality that you want your players to have. And but yeah, you're right. You got to hit on those picks. I don't believe the Flyers have a second pick in this draft, but they had a couple picks in the third round. So, but the fifth pick is a high enough pick where you're going to get a good player.
Right. Yeah, and yeah, hopefully that works out. I mean,
yeah.
it's the name of the game. We wanted to ask you just a little bit about your playing career. Your first year pro seemed to be an interesting first year, and I never understood the whole WHA draft and then NHL draft. You were originally drafted by the Edmonton Oilers, WHA, never signed. Ended up trading your rights to the Fighting Saints.
You know, first of all, I never knew I was drafted by the Edmonton Oilers.
Oh, no way.
Not in that era. I mean, I think I was.
That's hilarious.
It might have been before I went to the University of Minnesota. So I played after high school. I had a couple opportunities to go play college hockey. I forego an opportunity to go to Ohio State to play hockey.
Wow.
And I don't know why. I went there to visit. I was there, spent a couple days there. I went home and I told my dad I was just going to stay home and play junior hockey. My dad didn't talk to me for like 3 months.
Oh, no.
He was so pissed. But I ended up playing for the St. Paul Vulcans, which at that time was a big, it's kind of like in the USHL now. It was called the Midwest Junior Hockey League back then. There were six teams. We had a really good team. I got to play, like when I played high school hockey the year before, I played 20 games.
Wow.
That's it. Practice, play 20 games. So I got to go play junior hockey. I played like 80 games.
Oh, wow.
And now all of a sudden I got some bigger opportunities to play college hockey. So I ended up going to the University of Minnesota the next year. And somewhere in between that, I was drafted by the Edmonton Oil Kings or Oilers or whatever they were called. I didn't know that.
Wow.
And I think my rights got traded twice. I think once to Indianapolis and then to the Minnesota Fighting Saints, which...
Without you knowing?
I didn't know.
You didn't check your Twitter feed?
No, no,
there wasn't Twitter?
Yeah, right. No, I didn't check that. So after, you know, I get into playing college, and we played in the Frozen Four final that year. And so I was drafted by the WHA, or traded, my rights were traded to the Fighting Saints, so I had an opportunity to sign with them. And I signed with them. And then I think that summer I was drafted by the Flyers. And I signed with the Fighting Saints. I get sent to the minors. That's when I went to Johnstown. I was in Johnstown for 1 month before I got called up. And then I ended up playing 51 games with the Fighting Saints. I remember 1 month before the team folded, we had a meeting. Players only meeting, And I had just turned 20. You know, Johnny McKenzie, Dave Keon, Wayne Connolly, Rick Smith, Shaky Walton, Teddy Hampson, some of the big, like older, big name NHL, former NHL players on this team. We're in this room and we're voting on whether we should play without pay for 1 month because the owner is in a jam. He didn't have the money to make payroll.
Oh boy.
So I'm sitting in the corner of the room thinking, oh boy, what am I going to do here? If the team folds up, well, I'll just go back to college and I'll play baseball.
That's right.
No problem. And, you know, 1 month later, the team folds. We're all scrambling around. I had an opportunity. I became a free agent in the WHA, which was actually a pretty good scenario. I had a couple different opportunities to go to New England or Winnipeg, and I had an advisor. His name was George Lyon. He kind of helped me through things. I met him. He was one of those. You know, he was an alumni of University of Minnesota, and he helped athletes, student athletes. So he kind of took me under his wing, and he said, you know what, you just went through it. One of the teams in that league folded. The Flyers drafted you. They just won the Stanley Cup 2 years in a row. They want to sign you. Why don't you go there? So I ended up signing with the Flyers, and I remember we flew out to Philadelphia, and I signed the contract in March, and Keith Allen, we were at dinner one night, and Keith Allen says, okay, well, we'll see you at training camp. And I said, well, it's March. Is there nowhere I can go play? So he said, well, I guess we could send you to Richmond. So I went to Richmond in the American League and played there for a number of games. And the Flyers were so decimated with injuries, I ended up getting called up. And before I got called up, I suffered an eye injury that I didn't tell anybody about because I didn't
want to. Imagine that.
Yeah.
You so hard-headed.
So I got called up to the Flyers, and I played a game against – my first NHL game was against the Rangers at home, and we won. And the next day we flew to Boston, and Barry Ashby, who was assistant coach back then, and Clarkies looked at me, and they thought something was wrong with my eye, so they took me to the hospital, and I ended up having to have surgery on my eye. But so my season was ended that year, which would have been, you know, I would have got to play in the playoffs that year. Again, the Flyers were so decimated with injuries, I would have got to play more. But anyway, so that 1 year I played, I got two signing bonuses. One was $20,000 from the WHA team, and then the Flyers, I got $30,000. So I was...
There you go.
Oh, I was loaded, man.
You're loaded. Actually, just speaking of that, I need to borrow a little bit. If you still have it, I always tell Mark Gregg, who's the scout. Obviously, you know Gregor. I always tell him he still has his meal money from Springfield.
Yeah, he probably does, Gregor. Yeah. And the envelope.
Yeah, the envelope was in. Yeah, he's just waiting. Yeah, it's crazy. We were looking at that your first year. You were just explaining. I guess the North American Hockey League, you were just too good for, because...
I think I was a leading scorer when I got called up.
I was going to say...
I'm pretty sure I was.
15 points in six games?
Not bad.
That's not bad.
There you go.
No, not bad.
I played with... John Gofton was my left wing. He was the guy in Slapshot that threw up in the corner.
Oh.
On his hands and knees, he threw up. And Galen Head was... So John Gofton was 34 years old. My right wing, Galen Head, was 28. I was... Well, when I got sent there, I was 19.
Jeez.
And I'm playing center. Imagine me at center.
Oh, my God.
Winning face-offs,
making plays.
Yeah, right.
That's something.
Low centerman.
Yeah, of course. And even in Richmond.
Low and slow.
Yeah, right.
four G's, four apples in six games in Richmond as well. So you were lighting it up. Not to mention your season with 30 goals, the year you went to the finals, right, against the Islanders. The infamous offside to lose the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool year just because of this. We had the streak that year. And, you know, obviously, I think we were the top team in the league, and we ended up had a good playoff run. And we just, you know, we played the Islanders in the finals that year. And to me, it came down to we lost the first game at home in overtime. we took a penalty and they scored on the power play in overtime, and their power play, I don't know how many power play goals they scored in that series, but I think they had 18 or 19 power play goals.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
In the series.
That's insane.
So we, you know, we took too many penalties, and our penalty killing wasn't very good, obviously. So
We were told they called.
You know what? The Islanders were a good team. Another team similar to Colorado. They were building the prior years. I know the Flyers, I think one of the year the Flyers won the second cup, they beat the Islanders in a great series, seven-game series. So they were an up-and-coming team, and they ended up winning four straight. So they were a dynasty at that time. And
they were calling you Mr. Playoffs, because in that run you had 10 goals in those, 17, 18 games. It's pretty impressive, too. You had a great year that year.
And when you squeeze in one of your two Gordie Howe hat tricks in playoffs?
In the playoffs? You know you lead the team in that, in playoffs, Gordie Howe hat tricks, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Two.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
For sure.
Well,
I didn't know that either.
Not surprised.
I didn't know that either.
Not surprised.
He told me that today, but I didn't know that either. So we want to switch gears a little bit to something a lot of people don't know about, the SZBA, the Skate Zone Basketball Association. Riley never.
I witnessed a few.
Did we ever have Riley play?
I don't think he played. Did you ever get a game
I played
in?
A couple of times.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
But
well, you should have seen Chief
out
there.
I've observed more than I played.
Yeah, I don't blame you. We used to play basketball, and it could be 100 degrees or it could be snowing. I know him and I played one-on-one, and it was snowing one day. And he used to – it was funny. Right around 3 o'clock, he would come downstairs, or he'd call me and say, hey, get the guys, we're going to play some hoops. And, of course, I wanted to play, but I had to play against him every time, which was not much fun. But it was funny how guys snuck out of the rink.
Yeah.
They were like, it was, oh, I'm not playing today. No AP, chance. Adam Patterson, who's still there, video coach, he'd be like, no way. Like, dude, you have to.
Too intense?
He said, oh, I would lie to him and say he said everybody's playing. And they're like, fuck. Like, you know. So it was better. The more people,
oh, of
the
course.
Better.
Yeah,
like,
right.
The better. But most of the time it was a two-on-two game. Him and I used to, what was that game you made up, sides? We had to, like, we played one-on-one, but if he hit the rim – we had to run to, like, where the parking things were. And it was a workout. But he would wear, it'd be 95 degrees. You have two T-shirts on, then a long sleeve, and then a sweatshirt. And then...
Well, I didn't want to get sun on me.
Yeah. And then it was, it's slime time. This guy sweats like Johnny Steve, like the worst sweater you've ever seen. And I would... We would be done playing, and I would be soaking wet from him sweat. Not even as much as mine, but it was fun. We had
to keep guys from climbing on my back.
Yeah, right.
He says, the one time I'll never forget, we were playing. I think it was a 3-on-3 game, and I had my hair was long, like kind of like yours.
Like old Justin Bieber. Your Justin Bieber.
That
tips?
Was longer than that.
No.
And right after that, he would remind me when my hair got a little long. You need a haircut, don't you? Okay. Yeah, I guess that means I'm getting my haircut. I always said, yeah, no problem. But we're playing, and I got a headband on. And I'm not thinking. I hit a couple shots, and the score is, like, say, 4-1. And I shoot the ball. As soon as I release it, I'm like, 5-1. It's just out of my hand.
Yeah.
So it goes in, and he turns around and goes, you cocky little fuck. And I'm like, oh, shit. What did I do? I was just kind
of
playing around. Like,
yeah,
we do that when I play at home. Like, and so I'm like, I check the ball, and I'm just waiting. I don't know what he's going to do. And he fires it right off my forehead.
Off your headband.
Yeah, my headband goes flying up, and I'm like, I don't know what to do, right? What am I going to do? So I'm like, go to walk, and he goes, where are you going? You pussy, get back here. And I'm like, all right. And he's like, sorry about that. I'm like, okay, no problem. But Chief, you get Chief wound up out there. He turned and elbowed poor Sal one time right in the chops because everybody get wound up playing.
Oh, yeah.
You saw it.
Didn't Chief Homer knock your tooth out?
Oh, he chipped these, but the best was when he actually didn't mean to. He really didn't mean to. Well, maybe he didn't.
No, I didn't.
He had the ball like this, and I was like, I tried to stay in a safe area. I put my arm on his back, but he turned to go lay it up, and he hit me. And I went back, and I'm like, oh, boy, I can feel him, like the loose, like the chips.
Right.
And I go,
he didn't miss a shift, though.
I start spitting him out, commitment. And he goes, did I get you? Did you get me? My fucking teeth are falling out of my head.
Did I get you?
We had some good ones. One of the best was Brad Smith. He was all over. Like, dude, it was like you playing.
Like, he needed just a huge backboard.
Yeah, he would shoot it over the goal.
Probably hustling, like, though.
He hustled. He did work.
He did. But he worked hard.
The games were getting intense, and he was fouling home run. He didn't know he was. Like, he would literally grab your arm, like, go up for a shot, and he just doesn't know the rules. So he was all quiet, and he just turns to Brett, and he goes, "You're not going to like it if you do that again." Brett's like, "What'd I do?" He's asking me, "What'd I do?" And I'm like, "Just don't touch him."
Come on.
It wasn't that bad. No, I was fighting. You know, you were just intimidated because they were scared.
What about Ozil Lynch?
Oh, Ozil, yeah. No D. No Barry Hanrahan. No defense. Just shoot. Oh, he didn't play any D. Offense, yeah. He did not want to play D. And he had to play on your team, basically.
He
and
could fire threes.
So. Yeah, he actually. Yeah, he did.
The premier
he did. He
player.
Right? Never came back into the zone to help out. No. Defense. Hence the name Ozil Lynch.
We had to put Haxey and you together, because the one time, remember when Talk came and we were playing indoors, these two are going at it, and next thing you know, they're face to face, and I'm like, I'm not getting in there.
Talk's like, that was when we were playing indoors.
Yeah, we were playing indoors. It was, oh man, it was funny. There's so many good stories from the Basketball Association. It's now defunct.
Haxey was brutal. He couldn't even dribble when he first started. That's right.
He did this shot. He would go to shoot. He would go up on his toes. And he would just stay there.
Who's this?
Haxey.
Haxey.
He would be up on his toe, and you would fall for it because you think he's got to shoot it, and he would stay on his toe. His foot would come off.
He improved his game, though.
He did. Oh, man. He was very raw. He started. But I got to tell Mr. Homer, I got to tell the story when we played in the basketball league at Clarkie's. So Clarkie used to have this 4-on-4 league. It was actually a really fun league, and we're playing against guys from, like, that had played college ball, like, recently, not like, I mean, they weren't that old, but anyway, we played in this league, and this guy, he's a pretty big guy, he sets a screen, and now Homer, with his eye injury, which side is it? You can't see to your left,
right.
To your right, so this guy sets a screen on him, and I try to call it out, hey, to your right, but he runs into the guy because he didn't see him, so everything would have been fine, but the guy, Homer kind of looks at him, he goes, part of the game. I'm like, oh boy, here we go. Uh-oh. Something's going to happen. So literally a minute later, I think I took a shot, missed it, and they're going kind of on a fast break. It's 4-on-4. The court's not huge. So Homer's running as fast as he can, and this guy goes up, takes a shot. It's almost at the rim. He lands on his feet, and Homer rush and sickles him. Boom!
Punch?
No, not that bad.
Yeah, he missed the block.
He missed the block.
Yeah, I missed the ball.
The ball was literally at the rim. But the best part of it, this guy literally does a somersault over, lands off the court, and it's dirt there.
Yeah.
And he's got dirt on his face, and he jumps up and goes like this, and Homer just looks at him. And then the guy's like, oh. And Homer goes, part of the game. And the ref goes, he went for the block because the ref was too afraid. And then one of their guys goes, how many fucking fouls does this guy have, because we only had four guys.
Oh my god,
that was a long nine.
Oh man, yeah, they started giving us they started letting them shoot one free throw for every foul we had, because we
didn't have enough players.
We only had like four or five guys, but anyway,
gotta establish that was street
fun.
Credit.
That was fun, great story. And she,
another league that folded.
Folded too. They couldn't afford us.
Oh, too intense.
Yeah, it was intense. It was fun, though. It was a lot of fun. A lot of good stories from that. Oh, man. You wanted to bring up Homer as a coach and GM. I know one story about when he used to come in the room, get the boys going a little bit.
What? How soft he was?
Oh, yeah, how quiet when you came into the room. I'll never forget. We're Phantoms, and we're playing. I can't remember who we were playing, but tough period, like really bad period. The boys just weren't ready to play. And actually, I lie.
Who was the coach, Johnny?
I think so. It was at the end of the game. It was at the end of the game. And we run the sticks up, you know, when the buzzer goes. Sure. And everybody gives me like 30 seconds to get the sticks up on the wall. But we were going on the road, so I'm like putting everybody's stick together. The guys come in and they hand me their stick, and I'm putting it in order. Well, the door comes flying open to the Spectrum locker room, which you know, and I like jump out of the way. I'm like, whoo, and then I see it's him. I'm like, oh boy! Uh-oh. And I have a stick in my hand, and in one motion, poof, right out of my hand. Like, I'm like, where'd that go? And he went in, and you know, you're just giving it to the boys, which they deserve. But Chief told me one time you came in, the Flyers. I guess you were a head coach, and you came in with a stick, and not Terry Kartner reaches down puts his helmet on.
You want any shrapnel?
I was like, I wish I could have seen that. But I saw a couple of good ones. We told poor Jesse. He got around to him. It almost became where you knew it was kind of funny, some of the stuff you're saying. But we used to be like, we'd kind of hide, listen to what he was saying just to bust the guy's balls. Course. But he gets around to poor Jesse, and he had a tough night that night. And he says,
Jesse
Bullerice, yeah. You got to Jesse, and you're like, and Jesse, just don't touch the fucking puck anymore. And everybody's like, and he was almost ready to giggle too. And Jesse kind of just like put his head down and was laughing.
Right.
But there was some good ones. I used to love them myself.
Oh, yeah. You got to have that intensity.
You got a good memory. I don't remember that.
I know. That's what I always say.
You were too mad. Maybe you were just so mad. They were good ones, though.
Building off that, you had a chance to work with Mike Keenan, right, his assistant coach. What was that like? I mean, obviously, you played 10 years pro. You're an established, tough guy and all that. I mean, working with him, established coach.
Well, you know, it was Mike and EJ McGuire. I got to work with, and it was great. I went right from a player to an assistant coach. I was very fortunate that I was able to do that and to learn from Mike Keenan and from EJ McGuire. Like, I spent hours a day with EJ, and not as many with Mike. So, you know, EJ's he was sort of the anti-Mike, I guess.
Balance.
Yeah, they balanced each other out. They did. EJ could get just as mad as Mike, but he would never show. And Mike was a tremendous coach, obviously. And he had a unique way of motivating his players. And I think a lot of players over the course of Mike's career with the Flyers didn't get him. And he wanted to make players better. And he demanded their work. He's similar to Torts, in my opinion.
Yeah, right.
Demanded they work hard, demanded they put the time and effort in to get to better themselves as players. And, you know, you look at the players that improved under Mike. I mean, Brad McCrimmon is maybe the greatest example. Beast was, when he first came to the Flyers, he loved to have a good time. He didn't work very hard. He was kind of fat, kind of out of shape, just getting by. When Mike came in, he became a great player, like a great player. Had 1 year, he was plus 80, I think.
Jeez.
Playing with Mark Howe, obviously that helped. But yeah. Brad could stand on his own 2 feet too. But he saw the light under Mike Keenan, and a lot of guys did. I mean, he had a lot of funny ways of motivating players, but he was a brilliant, brilliant coach.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like he had a way of maximizing guys' potential.
Absolutely.
And then maybe the opposite way for some guys that weren't able to understand
him,
right?
Yeah, you could say the same thing about a lot of coaches, sure. Right? If they find a way to get to certain guys, I mean, I'm sure you go think back at your career, you have a favorite guy you played for. I got to play for a lot of good coaches in my career. Yep. I got to play for Herb Brooks, Fred Sherrill, Pat Quinn.
Wow.
I also got to play for some bad ones.
Right.
For whatever reason, to this day, I don't like. And they probably don't like me. I don't know. But yeah. I know Pat Quinn liked me. I know Herb Brooks liked me as a player. I know Fred Sherrill did. It's just the way it goes. And as a coach, you always have your favorite players. Like,
of course. Yeah.
I have my favorite guys, and I have guys that I didn't like. I remember one time, and this is it's about Danny Quinn. You remember Danny Quinn?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he came to the Flyers in a trade. I think we got Brindon Moore and Dan Quinn for Ron Sutter and Murray Barron. So something's going on the ice. They scored. And I started yelling at Dan Quinn. Like, right after they score, the game, you know, the puck drops, next shift happens. And I'm yelling at Dan Quinn like it was his fault. And I'm just berating him, and he finally had enough. He turns around, like, "Coach, I wasn't on the ice."
You said that? Did you think?
Yeah, I know that. I felt so bad, like I had to apologize.
Oh man!
Oh my God! He played here twice, right? Because we had him my first year. He came back, when I was with the Flyers.
Yeah, I don't
it was either 94, 95 or 95, 96.
Yeah, I wasn't here then.
Yeah, you were in Hartford then.
Yeah, but I didn't particularly like Dan as a player, the way he played, but he's a good kid, good yeah. guy. But we've laughed about that a couple times since then. But it's just funny how you just zone out. Right?
Oh man, talk about I think you were assistant coach for a couple of years and then you took
three years.
Yeah, yeah. The transition to head coach. I mean, that's pretty early in coaching, right? To take over.
Yeah, in hindsight. Clarkey and Jay Snyder was the president of the Flyers at the time. I don't know. I mean, I think back now, I was young, I was raw. And, the other thing that, and this is no disrespect to these guys because they went on to be great coach. I hired Mike Eaves and Andy Murray as assistant coaches. So now I have no head coaching experience. And Mike Eaves and Andy had really no coaching experience in the NHL. I mean, Eaver was in college coaching. Andy was, he coached in the American League. So we had zero NHL head coaching experience behind the bench. And we had a good, decent first year. Ended up going to the conference finals.
Oh,
wow.
But then struggled, I think, as the team kind of went south the last couple of years. Clarkey got fired after the second year. Russ Farwell came in, and then we made a change. Hitch came in, and Craig Hartsburg came in as my assistants the third year when I was a head coach. And then I got fired into my fourth year. But, thinking back, I was probably a little wet behind the ears. And you need experience on the bench. I look at, staffs today around the NHL, and the teams that have the experience it helps.
Sure.
You need playing experience. And when you're at the highest level, like the NHL is the highest level, let's face it, you need good coaching experience to do the job as well.
100%.
Yeah, for sure.
And how much back then, obviously it's extreme now with the iPads on the bench and just the probably the overkill of analytics. Like back then, like, as far as coaching goes and face-off plays and all this stuff, how relevant was that type of stuff back then? Was it as...
Yeah, it was relevant. I think the immediate feedback you can get your players now is probably beneficial. I think there's a lot of it is helpful. As a coaching staff now, there's so much information that's available.
Right.
It's difficult to siphon it all through and find out what's relevant and what you can use in a timely manner. It's just,
yeah.
I can't imagine doing it today.
Yeah.
Because it's a reaction sport. You gotta do things quickly on the ice. I get it. But as a coach, I'm not sure I would relish that doing it today.
Yeah.
Given all that stuff.
Yeah.
All those numbers, it gets
almost too much. Yeah,
it's almost too much. It seems that way anyway. Maybe I'm just not smart enough. But
well, I think then the challenge becomes like, where do you draw the line in the sand? Versus all these numbers and like the old eye test.
It still comes down to one thing. You got to have the puck, mm-hmm. And if you have it, you want to keep it. If you don't have it, you got to get it back. It's been that way forever.
Yeah,
and that ain't going away. So all the information you're getting are, how to check, how to defend. And now you're adding all this speed into the game. Like when I played, and then when I coached, the game wasn't as fast as it is today. The rules were a little bit different. It seemed like there was more physical play. I like a lot of things that go on in the game today. I just wish, we could make it a little more difficult in front of the net.
Yeah, right.
For sure.
I wish we could make it a little more difficult into the corners. It's got to be difficult to be a defenseman today.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean,
right?
How do you defend? You can't.
If they're calling by the book, you're in the box all night.
Yeah.
Just for literally pushing, not even cross checking, just pushing them. Speaking of EJ McGuire, I had a quick story about him, Homer. I'm not sure if I ever told you this, but when I was with the Phantoms, he was coaching Hartford, and I happened to be down in the room talking to their equipment guy, Mark Dumas, and EJ was they had that big TV. They had a really nice locker room because it was Hartford, you know, so it was a nice room. They had this big TV in there, but that's when they're rewinding and fast-forwarding. And so anyway, he's doing video with the team, and he yells for Doomy, and Doomy's like, is he calling me? I'm like, he says hi to me, and he goes, tell Doomy to come here. Come in here. I want to show him something. So he's literally in the middle of going over something with the team. He's like, we're talking about focus here. You guys losing focus, blah, blah, blah. He goes, I want to show you guys one clip. So they have the one camera that, like, stays on the bench, I guess, or maybe just during a timeout. They had radio timeouts then. So standing there, I know. Well, it's the American League. It's not on TV. Yeah. So anyway, the camera's right on the bench, and there's this chick sitting beside the bench, and she gets up, and Doomy, who's the equipment guy, is, like just staring at her, right? You know, so he kind of, like, zooms in, and Doomy, and he turns, and he watches her walk all the way up, and he goes, now that's fucking focus. Look at this. He goes, that's what we need. Doomy's the only guy doing it. He's the equipment guy. I swear to God. Dude, I was dying. I told all the guys in our room, I'm like, it was one of the greatest things I've ever seen. It was so funny. The guys started laughing, obviously, but I just had to tell that about
ultra,
EJ.
Ultra focus.
He was a nice man. He was a really nice man.
I'd be on the headset with him when I was an assistant coach, and he'd sometimes get so carried away about a player or something, right? I'd have to, you're breaking up. I'd turn the little button off, so I didn't have to hear on my own. He'd get so pissed, he'd come down between periods.
Somebody was telling me, someone was telling me about Joey sometimes would, like, keep Joey Mullen. Would be up top, and he was telling, I can't remember which coach it was who had the earpiece with him, maybe it was Lappy, but he's like, if he tells me that Yoggs is open one more time, or not Yoggs, but, you know, using him as an example, he tells me he's open one more time, like, I don't know what to say. I know, but that's funny.
That's why you have the eye in the sky.
Yeah, exactly.
What are your opinion on the current NHL game? You mentioned you like some things.
Yeah, I thought, okay. You know, 95% of the game it's awesome. You know, I think the speed, there's still some major league collisions. Like I said, I wish they'd make it a little more difficult in front of the net where it's
pay the price.
You know, there's a little bit of a price to go there. But overall, I mean, it's great.
Yeah.
It's great. And the skill level of the players today is so much higher. Continues to get better, and you know that you hear it all the time. It's sort of a cliche, but players in all sports are bigger, faster, stronger. Mm-hmm. There's so much information available for them in terms of training and nutrition, and hard to keep track of all that stuff.
Yeah,
sometimes it's a lot. But the game itself, I think the league's done a good job.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I wish they would fix. There's got to be a way to make it a little more. There's so many teams that are in trouble right now because of the cap. I wish they could do something to fix that. I don't know that they want to. I think they kind of like it.
Yeah.
Like that, where everybody's scrambling.
Yeah, I agree.
Parity is great, right?
Yeah.
Unless you're working in the league.
Yeah, right.
Or for a team, it's not so great.
Yeah.
Want to talk to you about Ed Snyder. I mean, obviously working for him, legendary owner.
Right.
Obviously, really amazing relationship.
I got to see Mr. Snyder on, obviously as a player, as a coach, and then getting to work with him when I was a GM, and then a little bit at the end there when I was a president of the Flyers. But what a wonderful man. Flyers family was him, really. I mean, he's the one that I'm sure he didn't start out thinking I got to make this a family, but because of the way he treated everybody, that's kind of what happened, really, over the course of time. And all he cared about was winning. When you worked for him, he wanted to make sure everything was available in order for you to do your job the best you could, and then he let you do your job. He didn't interfere. He would debate you on things, vehemently debate on whatever you wanted to do. You wanted to sign this guy as a free agent. You wanted to make this trade. You wanted to fire this guy. You wanted to play this guy in the power play over this guy. He wanted to debate that, you'd debate. But at the end of the day, it's okay, good luck. I hope you know what you're doing.
Yeah, right. So he was that involved in some of your day-to-day
stuff? No, but, you know, a lot of stuff. I remember one conversation. He called me up one time, and I can't remember what precipitated the call, but we might have made a small trade or something, and you try to keep him informed, right? I mean, he is the owner. He should know what's going on.
Of course, yeah.
So I must have forgot to tell him something, and he calls me up, and he's kind of yelling at me. So I listen and take it in, and then I say, okay, so let me get this straight. So if I want to give the equipment manager a $10,000 raise, should I call you on that? Well, no, don't be silly. You don't have to do that. But so, it's, you know, it's just, you could go back at him with stuff. It was just, I loved working with him. And you know what, at the end, I remember I talked to him a lot, even when he was near the end. I'd FaceTime with him, and we'd have a lot of good talks. But he, you know, everybody misses him, right?
Yeah,
I mean, we all miss him. Yeah. He was just a wonderful mentor and wonderful guy to be around.
I thought it was so cool. Like, he would come in, like, the day, like, say he came to the skate zone, it wasn't a lot, but I remember the one day I was outside grabbing something out of my car, and he came flying in that really cool color. I don't want to say purple. It's a lightish blue. That Porsche, lightish blue with a hint of purple. It's like metallic, like just sickest car. He comes flying in, windows down, shades on, just rock and roll, just blaring. I'm like, look at this guy. This is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Comes in, and I'm like, that car is sick, Mr. Schneider, because he came in the back way and then went upstairs. And he's like, you want to take it for a test drive? I'm like, absolutely not. my luck, I'll pull out and get T-boned. I'll be trying to work the rest of my life to pay it off.
We were driving to lunch one time. We were going to Famous Dave's down there on Columbus Boulevard.
Yeah.
You know that road there? He's going around 20 miles an hour. I said, this thing open up a little bit?
Imagine you saying that.
So he stomps on it. Oh. We're going about 140 miles an hour down Columbus Boulevard. Ooh, this is all right.
Oh, yeah. My God. That's funny you say that because you're pretty fast driving.
I settle down.
Yeah, I drive a lot. When they used to come, like, say we're in Brooklyn or New York, it'd be like, how long take you? About 30 minutes.
30 minutes?
Yeah, whoever was riding with him was like,
hold on tight.
Yeah. Used to bust strap his chops.
Nobody fell asleep.
No, they didn't. I'll tell you that. I remember, too, a couple times, like, Mr. Schneider, like, he was so passionate, like, I remember one time he would come, not more than one time, if the guys had a bad game, and he would come down. I remember when Chief was coaching, and he was all over both of you, and nothing really that you had done, but he was just so mad, and he kept coming down, and I was, like, waiting because the guys kicked everyone out of the room having a team meeting. You know, you've been in those.
Sure.
And he had his ear up to the door, and he was like, what are they saying there? What are they saying? I'm like, I don't know. I'm trying to listen too, you know. But he was so red. You know, when you get mad, you get red like that. But he was awesome. He was just awesome. Just an awesome man.
Sometimes you just gotta take it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let him get it off
exactly.
His chest.
What are you gonna say?
Yeah, exactly. What are you gonna say?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. No problem.
Yeah. Well, it's got to be amazing to work with him and kind of pick his brain and understand where the vision comes from, because it's like to build a franchise like the Flyers and to surround
and everything that's spun off of the Flyers,
right,
really,
exactly.
When you think about it, Prism and
I forgot about
all
that.
All his companies, it's unbelievable. Pretty it's an unbelievable amazing. Story.
Mr. Holmgren, I just want to thank you for everything you've done for me. Obviously, you had so much to do in my career. With the Flyers, with the Phantoms, even Team USA, did a lot for both of us.
Absolutely.
And we appreciate your time. Means a lot to us for you coming on.
Well, thank you for having me, Derek, and Riley. I think very highly both you guys, and got a lot of fond memories of working with both you guys. It was awesome, and yeah. I'm happy to see you guys doing this. It's great. And I'm happy that I was able to get over here and do it with you.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
For sure.
I wish I had a better memory, but apparently I need Prevagen.
I feel the same way. He pulls those stories out of his ass all day. I'm like, how do you remember these things?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how impressive. I do, but good
appreciate
memories.
You hopping on, man.
Yeah, great to see you again. My pleasure. Good to see you.